Hi, I'm Dan Hornberger, the host of Breaking Chains, the podcast that focuses on the grassroots of disc golf, the amateurs, the local clubs, the individuals who make a difference, and those who have had their lives changed because of the sport. This episode of Breaking Chains is sponsored by MVP Disc Sports, the leader in disc golf technology. MVP offers an incredible selection of discs within their MVP, Axiom, and Streamline disc lines. The name Per Volstedt may not be familiar to you, but he has had quite an impact on the disc golf world, especially over the last few months. A few years ago, Per had the idea to create a disc golf video game you could play on your phone or tablet. The end result? Disc Golf Valley. In this episode of Breaking Chains, Per talks about the development of this popular game. Per Volstedt, my guest for this episode of Breaking Chains. Per Volstedt is my guest on this episode of Breaking Chains. So let's start off with getting to know you a little bit. Tell me about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm an IT professional living in Sweden. Been working with BI, Business Intelligence, the software company here. I've been playing disc golf for about 5 years or so. And game development has always been sort of like a hobby for me. I've always tried to make games and play games, obviously. A few years ago, I finally decided that, seems like it's time to for someone to make a disc golf game, right? There's been a few around, but really it was more like a learning project for me to get into. I've never really been a programmer, never really dug into that programming aspect, but my girlfriend now is a programmer. So she's helped me a lot with getting started with that. And it seemed like a good project just to learn programming, to try to build a game.
So you started a game without any knowledge of programming before?
Pretty much, yeah.
That's incredible.
Which might explain some of the bugs you might run into.
Very few bugs. And hopefully you're not getting too many complaints, because I think it's a terrific game.
Yeah, the best way of finding bugs is to let the game out there and let people test it. So.
So this game you've created seems to have taken off. And you have been playing for 5 years. So let me talk about your disc golf experience. So
sure.
How did you begin playing disc golf?
I was introduced by a friend probably more than 5 years ago. I mean, disc golf has been around in Sweden for a long time. Sort of not really mainstream, but like bubbling under the surface a bit. There's courses in most of the major cities and in the countryside here and there. But I just tried it with a friend, you know, he brought some discs that I could borrow, and then I didn't play for another year probably. And then we started playing again, and I think what really got me into it was, you know, the YouTube explosion.
Joe Mez in Central Coast.
Yeah, for sure. Which I'm guessing that's true for a lot of new players, right? They're being brought in by YouTube today.
Absolutely.
So we started watching, and then it quickly turns from just a hobby to like an obsession, right? When you watch it on YouTube, you can go out and play yourself.
And then you started buying discs, yes?
Yes.
That's the hardest thing to stop, Per. I think, you know, you start buying discs and you think, okay, I like this one, but this one is a cooler color.
Yeah, and it seems to apply to virtual discs as well in the game.
Yes, it does. So what are your local courses?
We have some good ones, actually. I'm in Lund in Sweden, which is in the southern parts. So in Lund, we have a tournament level course called St. Hans Backa, where they've had the Swedish Masters Cup here, like the national tournament, which it's a tough one. 18 holes, lots of elevation, difficult pars for sure. I've never gone under par on there. And we have some more casual courses, a smaller 9-hole one. And in the area, there's tons to choose from as well, if you can drive around a little bit. Spoiled for courses, actually.
Oh, that's good. Now, do you participate in leagues and tournaments there?
I don't. I'm not even part of the... there's an organization here that organizes practice and stuff like that. And I really should. I don't know why I'm not, at least as a support member. I do have a 9-month-old kid right now, so time is limited.
Yeah. You're at that stage. Okay, well, I get it.
Yes.
Do you actually get a chance to get out during the week?
It's been a while.
I'm sorry to hear that. But priorities, yes.
I mean, at some point, I guess he'll be at the age where I can go out together with him. So that's going to be fun. I look forward to that.
Per, that's in like 6 years.
Start him young, right?
Okay. All right. So maybe 4. Okay. So you get involved with this sport, and then all of a sudden you have this idea to create this app.
Right.
How did that happen?
I've built other games before this, but as I mentioned, my programming skills have been pretty limited. I got a lot of support from my girlfriend. She's the one who came up with the name. And I think the core concepts that sort of started it all out was, you know, the basic interactions. So the base game had no gameplay modes at all. Yes, you could play a course. But all of the basic interactions was about the same, you know, the actual throw and the putt motion.
Okay.
And I realized pretty quickly that those mechanics felt pretty good. Like, they're super simple. Even small kids can figure out how to pull back on the disc and let it go and like flick the disc towards the basket. But you get the feel, that the same feel you get from throwing discs in real life, sort of like with the reach back, and you modify hyzer and anhyzer angle. And when I realized that those core mechanics felt pretty good, I was like, yeah, maybe I should actually put some effort into this to see if it works out.
Were you inspired by any other games?
I've actually made an effort to not play any of the other disc golf games that are out there. Yes, because I don't want to be influenced by, you know, even just things like UI design, and I want it to feel fresh, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that there are other disc golf games on mobile that look really good, but they seem to take a different approach, right? Some are more simulation focused, where you have every detail of playing disc golf and so on. So I feel like there's a lot of niches you can cover with different disc golf games.
Okay, you come up with the idea. Your girlfriend's helping you with the programming. You have the system down, but now you need courses. And I don't remember initially you had, I think, did you have 6?
Yeah, something like that.
What were your inspirations for courses? Did you just say, okay, one that's kind of spooky, and then, you know, one that's the Gulch one is the one that always killed me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the new one, which is Al Wood, I believe.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, so what inspired you with these courses?
Yeah, the course design is a big part of it, right? Because if the courses aren't fun to play in the game, then it's that kind of ruins the whole concept anyway. I want sort of a mix between what feels like real disc golf, like traditional courses, but also want to make them like visually distinct with interesting lines, and maybe lines you wouldn't normally throw in real life, because you can't really throw from, you know, from mountain to mountain in real life, usually.
Well, you could, but the time it would take to go get your disc would be very prohibitive.
Right.
How about the visual style?
Yeah.
That's what I love about it.
I get a lot of feedback on that. Some players are like, no, we want a more realistic style.
Oh, no.
The reason I've gone with the style I have now is because, A, it works really well on mobile. There are limits on mobile devices for what you can actually render before it gets too heavy. And B, you know, I'm not really an artist, so I'm limited in what I can do. Creating photorealistic assets for everything would take ages.
So you're actually drawing up these images on a computer?
Many of them, yeah. I also utilize asset packs. There's lots of 3D artists out there who just make 3D assets for developers to purchase and use. So if they fit the graphical style and I like them, you know, a tree is a pretty standard thing. There's lots of options for trees when it comes to assets. So if I find assets that I really like, I might add them if they fit the graphical style.
Was there a lot of trial and error?
For sure. Pretty much 90% was trial and error.
Like any good idea, Per, like any good idea. It takes a long time.
I'm not sure how much we want to go into, you know, the technical back-end aspects of the game, but there's a lot of stuff going on with multiplayer and, you know, authentication. You have to log in, of course, with your Google account to play. I made a decision pretty early on that I think that if you want to make a mobile game today, like a modern game, you need to be able to save your progress online so that if you switch your mobile phone, people switch phones after like 2-3 years, right?
Right.
You need to keep your progress, keep your discs. If you save it locally on the device, people are going to get tired of that real quick. So there's a backend running that saves your data, your discs. And I use Google sign in for that to log in. Most people have a Google account these days. And not that I trust Google with my information, but I trust them more than I would trust some random guy who made a disc golf game. So.
Correct. Did you have beta testing? Like, did you send this out to maybe a dozen people or 20 people or something and get some kind of response from them?
I have a pretty dedicated tester group. The Android version and the iPhone version goes out to first. Some really good testing being done by some of those guys. And also I have like 3 younger brothers who are all playing and testing it as well.
Oh, free labor.
I mean, that's the only way I'm going to get it.
So you and your girlfriend basically had to come up with 2 different systems, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. So the game engine that I'm using is called Unity. So if some of your listeners are familiar with game development, they've probably heard about Unity. It's one of the most popular game engines. And it's sort of, it takes care of a lot of that for you. It has different build targets. So you can build it to iOS or to Android. You can even build it for PC. So that's an option in the future, maybe, if you want to sit on their Windows or Mac PCs and play, that might show up.
That'd be great.
So you're actually only building the game once and you're writing all the code in C#, which is a popular programming language that is actually fantastic for beginners who want to learn. So if any of your listeners wants to get into game development or programming, build a game in Unity with C#. That's amazing for learning programming.
How long was the entire development then? From when you started to when you went live with the game, how long did that take for you to do that?
I think it's been close to 3 years now. I need to go in and check at some point to see. But I mean, the first year was just learning programming, right? There was no real progress being done.
Well, the interface is so responsive. Is that something you have to maintain on a daily basis?
It's you get some help with that from Unity as well. There's a framework for UI built in, but then you can sort of choose how much flash you want to add to that, you know, with animations and things popping in and popping out. And personally, UI programming is what I find the least interesting of developing games. Just building menus and buttons and all of that. If I could find a wizard to do that magically for me, I definitely would.
Well, that's where the girlfriend comes in, right?
Yeah.
What about the sounds? I think the sounds are so cool.
I made a sound implementation myself when I first built the game that was very bare bones. I just found the simplest sound examples I could find that sounded reasonably similar to like hitting a tree and stuff like that. But then during this summer, I started collaborating with another guy in Sweden who is actually a sound producer. His name is Magnus Alakangas. He helped out just because he liked the game and he's also an avid disc golfer. So he made a full sound rework from the ground up with, you know, proper sound engineering skill and equipment. He was actually out in Stockholm at Järva, one of the, it's a famous course, maybe you've heard of it, in Stockholm, where they've played some big tournaments. So he was actually out there recording sounds from baskets being hit and stuff like that. So I really like the sound now. The music is made by one of my brothers.
Well, the music changed. Didn't the theme song changed twice now, hasn't it?
There's been a couple of additions, I think. Yeah.
Okay. How popular is the app right now?
When it was released, it was kind of a slow burn, right? So it started building the user base
maybe about a year in, and then it did get pretty big at some point, and that's when I started talking to Latitude 64 here in Sweden. So
they weren't on board initially.
No, they were not. Yeah, some of your listeners might have played back then when it was not Latitude 64 branded. So all the discs were just generic discs.
Okay.
There was the putter was called a crab. Everything was a fish for some reason. Fastest driver was Samantha, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, so then my son was born and I put absolutely no effort into the game. So it really started to decline. But then this pandemic started and there was a boost. Definitely had a Corona bump and a Simon Lissott bump, right? That was maybe the big one. Yeah, I posted a video when he played it. So now I think we are around maybe 30,000 players a day or so logging in.
The goal of Breaking Chains is to grow the sport by presenting fellow disc golfers who have inspirational stories. If you or someone you know would like to be on the show, send an email to rockfishproductions@gmail.com. Or you can contact me through the show's social media accounts. On Facebook, Breaking Chains the Podcast. Instagram is Breaking Chains DG. And Twitter is @BRKNGC. Check them out, and if you're so inclined, drop me a line and provide some feedback. I'd appreciate it. This episode of Breaking Chains is sponsored by MVP Disc Sports, the leader in disc golf technology. MVP now has the capacity to support both the sport and Team MVP in many new ways, one of which is offering signature and tour series discs. Disc golfers can support their favorite Team MVP members and find new and unique stamps on some of their favorite discs. A portion of every team disc sold goes directly to the players to help fund their tour expenses. Visit the MVP Pro Shop, a unique place for Team MVP members to get their discs to their fans. The shop not only serves as an outlet for MVP, Axiom, and Streamline oddities and prototypes, but also creates a much more intuitive purchasing experience for the disc golf community as a whole. This episode's guest is Per Volstedt, creator of Disc Golf Valley. In the show's second half, Per talks about turning his idea into a full-time job, the look of Disc Golf Valley, and what the future holds for this terrific game. This is Breaking Chains. Does this become your full-time thing?
So, yeah, funny thing, right? Today, it's the 1st of September, right? It's actually my first day as a full-time employee with Latitude, working mainly on this game.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Really fun. And huge props to Latitude for taking a chance on this and getting me on board. They've been extremely supportive from the start, basically.
So when the game was live and was getting a following, then you decided to reach out to Latitude. And what was their initial response?
We've had a collaboration for a while, but it's been just unofficial, sort of. Yeah, they sent me over some discs to try, just to make sure that I knew how they fly when I add them to the game. And then I've had some logos and stuff in the game. But when we had this big upswing during Corona, they realized that, hey, there's some marketing potential here. Maybe we should actually do something serious with this.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, around here, the East Coast of the United States, we had countless tournaments, virtual tournaments on Disc Golf Valley. People just needed to play somehow.
Yeah.
Because we were told not to go out in the courses and stay in our homes. And so your game got a lot of people through some really difficult times.
You had parks closed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back in time before Disc Golf Valley. And your life certainly has changed from then until now. But life before Disc Golf Valley, vastly different from now or no?
Well, from now on, it will definitely be, right? I was in a totally different career before this, in more of a software development and business intelligence career. So not exactly the way I planned my career to suddenly become a game developer, but it's super fun, super fun.
Will you be the only person working on the game now? Or will you use the guy who acquires the sounds and then your brother? Will this be the team, or are you solely responsible for it now?
Initially, I'll be the only full-time employee. We might reach out to people like that and contract them for things like audio, where we don't have a lot of experience.
Okay.
If things go really well, maybe we'll hire more people, you know, you never know.
What's the most difficult part about the whole process?
That's a good question. There's a lot of difficult things in game design, and I've noticed that, for example, course design, when you're actually building the holes, actually the technical process of building the hole is not that difficult. But what takes time is just coming up with good concepts for the holes.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you have to suddenly make 9 new holes for a course that all have to be visually interesting, they have to play in an interesting way and not be duplicates of anything else. Things like that are, it's a lot more sitting around and thinking than it is actually hacking away at the code.
And you want to keep it aesthetically appealing. I think it would be a mistake, and this is my opinion, I think it would be a mistake to have it suddenly appear almost like a Mario game.
Right.
You know, where it's so cartoonish that it's ridiculous. This has a certain minimal beauty to it that I love, and I hope you maintain that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of games that follow that visual style now, like the modern Zelda games all have that sort of stylized visuals. Not gonna claim that my game looks anywhere as nice as the Zelda games, but sort of the same.
Well, you're talking about, you know, one guy versus, you know, a team of 50, probably, right?
Yeah. When we started out with Disc Golf Valley, we were playing a lot of Stardew Valley. So the name was a little bit inspired by that.
What was it called?
Stardew Valley. I'm sure some of your listeners have probably run into it. It's sort of also got that sort of stylized look.
Stardew, okay.
I've been a little bit inspired by another game called Firewatch. A lot of nature visuals.
That's cool.
Lots of inspirations to be found.
Per, how often do you actually play the game?
Too much. I mean, unfortunately, I don't play it just for fun, right? It's just right. A lot of testing and making sure everything works.
Now, you added that little button at the bottom, you know, so that players can report bugs and things like that. Do you get a lot of that?
Tons, yeah. Lots and lots of feedback. I think one of the most fun things of having run this game is just the feedback you get from the community. The Disc Golf community is fantastic. So many passionate people with opinions and ideas, and I read pretty much all feedback that I get. I don't implement all of it, but I definitely read it.
Oh, that's good to know. Oh, I forgot to ask you this. So let's go with Al Wood. What's your best score in Al Wood?
Yeah, some of you dedicated players might be happy to know that I have not got 3 stars on Alwood in my track account.
It is so difficult. It's the only course I don't have 3 stars on.
And I could get it. I know how to birdie every hole, right? I just haven't sat down to do it yet.
That's great.
But it's part of the design, right? Difficulty is always on the back of my mind. How difficult should I make things? Some of my testers are nuts at the game, right? They beat me easily, right? And I thought I was pretty good at it.
I look at the tournament outcomes and I'm seeing guys with like 13 under and I'm like, come on, how is that possible?
It's a humbling thing when you build the game and you think, hey, I'm pretty good at this. And then people come around and just crush you.
The irony of life, Bear.
I don't want the game to be just for those players, right? I want it to be fun for everyone. So difficulty is going to be different for each course. And some holes I just want to be kind of fun or visually interesting. They don't have to be brutally difficult every single hole.
Right. So what's in store for Disc Golf Valley?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff. I'm working full time on it now. I will have some paternity leave, but only partially. Some of the interesting stuff that is currently being tested is one of the game modes that's pretty bare bones right now is the AI mode, where you play against just the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been hugely fleshed out. There's a full tournament mode now with lots of different interesting tournaments, and you play multiple rounds, and yeah, it's pretty fun. The whole progression system is getting redone. There's not going to be a disc shop, so people get tired of just getting random discs, right? I totally understand that. There needs to be a more interesting way of getting new discs. So,
uh-oh.
disc shop where you can buy. And that's, you know, it's not a cash shop. It's an in-game currency. So I want to keep it not pay to win. Pay to win is the term, right?
Yeah. So
you don't want people to just be able to buy themselves to being best at the game.
Okay. There are a couple of questions that I didn't include that I just thought of last night that I wanted to ask you. A little while ago, there seemed to be a change in the game where the discs were just rolling, constantly yes. rolling. And I noticed I did go on to, I think it was Reddit, and there were a lot of people saying, what is going on with these discs? Is that something that you tried something and it didn't work? Or because now it doesn't seem like they're rolling as much.
That's it's a topic that I would love to talk a lot about. It's really interesting to me. You know, the physics of the discs in the game, because it's so interesting, disc physics in real life, right? That's one of the things I had to research quite a lot for the game. And the physics simulation in the game now is actually pretty robust. I think people would be surprised if they saw what's going on in the back end. I mean, it's a mobile game. There are definitely limitations to how much you can simulate, but the entire disc flight in the game now is physically realistic. It's actually simulated in the physics engine in the way that you would expect it to happen in real life, which is, it surprised me that was possible to do on a mobile phone, but it does actually work pretty well. And when it comes to things like rolling, that was also an attempt by me to try to implement this in a more physically real way, where all of the inputs to the physics engine were more realistic. But of course, it turns out that there has to be some kind of balance between real physics and playability. Like, discs rolling away is something we see a lot in real life, and it's really frustrating. So when we play a game, do we really want the disc to roll away as much as it would in real life? Maybe not. In real life, you have grass and small pebbles, which is not simulated in the same extent in the game. So maybe your disc is not going to stop on that route. It's just going to keep rolling because it's just a flat mesh underneath it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to implement a realistic rolling physics mode, but it turned out it was just frustrating. And then you compromise. Another really good example of that is the chains, of course, the chains of the baskets. So I've made the conscious decision for the chains to actually make them physics objects. So they're handled by the physics engine. It would be very easy to just program, say, you know, a sphere that if the disc is within this sphere, just slow it down and put it in the basket, right? That would be very simple. But I immediately, when I tried that, I felt that this is wrong. It doesn't feel like disc golf if there's not actually the risk of, you know, spit outs. You need to have that physics interaction. And even if you still get frustrating spit outs, at least in your mind, you know, well, actually, it was a physics interaction with the chains that caused this. If I had put that putt a little bit to the left, a little bit lower, maybe it would have stuck. You know, that makes it a lot more satisfying if it's a real thing happening.
That, my friends, is a signal for the rapid fire round. To conclude each episode of Breaking Chains, I'll fire random questions at my guests. Some of the questions will be disc golf related, others not so much. Okay, pair, here we go. One disc that would never make it into your bag.
Anything not Latitude at this point, right?
Name of your first pet.
First pet. That was Sigge. It was a cat.
A driver mid-range putter tournament. What are your disc choices?
Driver mid-range putter. A pure fuse musket.
Beside Disc Golf Valley, what's one app no one should do without?
It has to be app on your phone or?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with UDisc because I love it.
Favorite musician or band?
Ooh, I'm a big fan of The Shins.
Complete the following sentence. People should play disc golf because
they should get my game, right? I've had people do the opposite, where they started playing my game and then got interested in disc golf, but I think it's mostly the other way around.
Favorite novel?
Oof, that's a good one. I'm a big fan of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Is that the name of it?
Oh, I just started watching that.
So yeah. It's a TV series, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I got about halfway through the first season and I want to finish that up.
The book is brilliant. I've not had time to watch the show, unfortunately.
I didn't know it was a book. I thought it was just a Netflix production. So I'm going to have to look up that book.
I can recommend it.
Coolest animal you ever saw while playing disc golf?
While playing disc golf, I haven't seen a lot while playing disc golf. So like maybe a squirrel. That's not very cool.
Oh, that's a squirrel. If you could play a round of disc golf with any person, dead or alive, whom would you pick?
Can I pick a whole card?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to stick with disc golfers. But so I would want Danny Lindahl on the card. Yes, for form tips. Nate Sexton, for sure, for his snark. Last one, maybe Simon Lissott, just to watch him crush all the holes that I bogey.
Favorite computer game?
Whew. Yeah, I do play some computer games. I don't have a lot of time for it these days. I've been playing a lot of Total War Warhammer. Have you heard about it?
Well, Warhammer started as a miniature game, I believe.
Yes, I used to play it when I was a kid. I think people should bring it back. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, Per, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's been fun.
That wraps up this episode of Breaking Chains. A big thanks to Per Volstedt. You can find out more about Per on the Breaking Chains website, www.rockfishproductions.com. This episode of Breaking Chains was sponsored by MVP Disc Sports. MVP offers an awesome selection of discs within their MVP, Axiom, and Streamline disc lines. Be sure to check out the MVP Pro Shop and take advantage of the special offers. You can purchase unique MVP, Axiom, and Streamline discs, prototypes, and Team MVP discs, which will simultaneously help support the Team MVP players. You can find the Pro Shop at www.mvpproshop.com. MVP, the leader in disc golf technology. Kevin MacLeod wrote and performed the show's theme, Unwritten Return, and Big Rock. The music at the break, Indie Surf Rock, was written and performed by Benji Jackson. I'll conclude this episode of Breaking Chains with a quote from my friend Mark Steele. May your strokes be less than the trees you hit. This podcast is copyrighted by Rockfish Productions, LLC.